Welcome to the EAIE podcast. This is episode number 79 in our ongoing series of conversations on topics of interest to international higher education professionals across Europe and beyond. My name is Laura Rumbly. I'm the EAIE's Director for Knowledge Development and Research. And today we're sharing with you the voices of some real people who are really interested in artificial intelligence. News, discussions, and debates about AI are rampant today, and with good reason. This powerful and rapidly developing technology is now in the hands of the masses. Students and teachers, companies and universities, governments, friendly and not so friendly, everyone, it seems, can now tap into the jaw-dropping potential of tools like ChatGPT and so many others. At the EAIE, we are of course interested in what this technology might mean for higher education generally, and international education specifically. So in search of some peer-to-peer conversation on this topic, we reached out to colleagues in Finland, the United States, and the Netherlands to learn more about how they're thinking about and using AI in their daily lives, in both administrative and teaching and learning contexts. Our guests for this episode are Cynthia Albi, who joins us from the United States, where she's a professor of teacher education at Georgia College, a public liberal arts university in the state of Georgia. For more than 20 years, she's also supported the development of other faculty members through the Governor's Teaching Fellows Program at the Louise McBee Institute of Higher Education at the University of Georgia. Jeroen Auberg works at Wageningen University and Research for the Department of Corporate Strategy and Accounts, where he focuses on strategic international institute-to-institute collaboration in the field of higher education. And Sandra Slotta, who is Senior Policy Advisor Internationalization at Arcata University of Applied Sciences in Helsinki, where she is Secretary of the institution's Internationalization Group. I'll also note here that Sandra and Jeroen are currently members of the Steering Group for the EAIE's Expert Community on Strategy and Management. In this role, they were involved as facilitators of a campfire session at the 2023 EAIE Conference and Exhibition focused specifically on ChatGPT. You'll hear more about that in the conversation ahead. Thanks for tuning into this chat with real people about AI. Cynthia, Jeroen, Sandra, welcome to the EAIE podcast. Like many others around the world, the EAIE is really fascinated by the developments in relation to artificial intelligence, of course, commonly referred to as AI, and what impact this could have or will have on international higher education specifically, or on the wider higher education sector. I know that you all are also interested in this topic. So to kick us off in this conversation, I was hoping that each of you could briefly share a little bit about how you got interested in this subject and how you've been engaging with it professionally. And to kick us off, I wonder if Sandra, you might tell us a few words about kind of your origin with this topic.
Sure. Thank you, Laura. So basically, I blame curiosity. So there was this fad going on and I wanted to know more. And that sort of coincided when the expert community for strategy and management within the EAIE was asked to propose a campfire session for the conference of 23. And so I kind of volunteered and said, well, why don't we do something about ChatGPT? But I would like to focus on the positive side, because at the time there was a lot of, you know, people being scared of ChatGPT and AI and what that would do to higher ed. And so I really wanted to look at the other side of things and maybe also look at the administrator's work. And so I asked Jeroen if he would join me. And we submitted the proposal and it was accepted. So then we started digging into that a little bit. A second thing for me professionally is that I've been working as a project manager on an international project. And there I've been using ChatGPT quite a lot within that project, sort of in management tasks, but also in content production.
Fantastic. Great. So that links nicely, I would say, to Jeroen, if you might tell us how you got drawn into this area as well.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. Thank you, Sandra. Indeed, the campfire session was one of the elements that draw my attention to ChatGPT in a positive way. I used it before the campfire session mainly to help me get started with documents and activities. I noticed myself that I'm always struggling with a blank page, where to start writing, So I started using ChatGPT for, okay, how can I get a first draft of something and then improve it and make it my own and get things going there? So that was basically one of the first things that I got started with on a professional level. Within education, we use a lot more of AI, but that is probably a different topic than where we are here for today, I guess.
Wonderful. Okay, so there were these sparks of curiosity and this need maybe to get some juices flowing with some work that you're doing in your professional lives. Cynthia, how does this kind of beginning with AI and ChatGPT resonate with your own interesting or your starting point with the topic?
Well, I've worked for more than 20 years just intensively with faculty across the state of Georgia. And a lot of people have read my book. And so I think people just often turn to me when they have questions about college teaching in general. And I know people rely on me. And so when a college asked me about ChatGPT early in December 2022, when it had just come out, I thought, well, I better take a look at this. And so I did. The first thing I asked it was to write me a grant for innovative classroom furniture. And in a minute or two, it rolled out a pretty good grant. And at that point, my heart was pounding. I felt simultaneously horrified and giddy. And I knew I was going to have to spend December just really intensively studying it. And I tried to start publishing on it and speaking about it as fast as I could so people would know about it. And since then, I've used it extensively in my classrooms. I teach a variety of education courses, and I've found that by giving students a lot of free rein to use AI, very quickly they get accustomed to it and they actually kind of wean themselves off it over time. They like to use it a lot at first when they're struggling to learn a new concept, but then as they get more comfortable with it, they actually use it less and less and more wisely.
Okay, so I'd love to dig into a number of these different things that you've raised with regard to the power and potential of the technology and the different ways that people might be using it across the different domains in which we work in higher education. You all have given some very practical and concrete examples of how you've started to kind of engage with it. I wonder if we could back way out for a minute and table some rather big picture issues and then kind of work our way back into a bit more of a practical and hands-on discussion. So from kind of that very high level, from where you sit, what's at stake here for higher education? Because we hear a lot of, I think there's a lot of dramatic language and a lot of hand-wringing about what's possible and what might be worrisome about the technology. So from each of you, I'm hoping that you might be able to give us one or two key issues that really grab your attention when it comes to the peril or promise of AI for our field. Jeroen, could I start with you on this question?
Yes, of course. I think for me, there are two elements that stand out with this question. On one hand, that is the negative approach we have relating using of AI technology. People say it's biased, it's leading in one direction. How trustworthy is this? Will it be used for negative purposes like cheating or those kind of elements? But that's with every new tool, that people have their first response in a negative way, and we're not focusing on what it could bring. For me personally, there is one other question which is for me more critical than the reliability or how people use it, is what is our role in the higher education sector? At the universities, we're teaching people to become critical thinkers, reflect on what kind of information they're being presented, whether it's true, whether there are biases, etc., etc. But what do we do with the other layers of education? What towards the more practical oriented layers of education? Are we equipping those institutions or helping them how to incorporate it in their education to enable our society to use it to the full potential, the AI options? And there, I think that we still have to do quite a bit as a sector. And that's also something that I feel, how can we do this and how can we bring things together? And I think a platform like the EIE could really facilitate bringing those different educational layers together and discussing a topic which is across every layer and where we think that we want to equip all learners to make the best use of these kind of tools, because it is there and it will come to every bit of society in a very strong and very rapid motion. So it's not something that will happen in 5 years' time. It will happen today, tomorrow, and the day after. So we need to prepare and help our colleagues in education and in the more administrative side of the running of the organizations. And I think there is a good task that lies ahead of us where we have to pay attention to.
Thank you, Jeroen. Cynthia, from your perspective, what are some of the, you know, really major burning questions around this technology?
We were just talking about that idea of role, how our role is going to have to change. And I think one of the reasons I'm excited about AI is that I feel like it's forcing our hand, that we used to really rely on grades to pressure students into doing what we wanted, which was problematic. And now it's become entirely possible to have AI complete some or all of a course for a savvy student who wants to figure out how to do that. It's not terribly difficult. And detection is probably never going to be a viable possibility. So I think that changes our role. We instead, we're going to have to do what we always should have been doing, and that is to make sure that students truly value the learning, so much so that they have no desire to harm that learning. And our role is going to be to help them discover that value and see that value. And I know that may sound difficult, but I know it is absolutely possible.
Very exciting and challenging consideration there in the learning domain. Very interesting issues that Jeroen has pointed to in terms of the administrative side of the house and the kind of the importance of ensuring value to all sectors of higher education of this technology. Sandra, big issues that are tumbling around your head.
Thank you. Well, I think basically I want to combine what Jeroen and what Cynthia said. So for me, it's about two different aspects. One is really big. I mean, it's the purpose of higher education. What are we doing? And basically what we want to do is, of course, to teach all students and prepare them for better lives and for doing good in the world. And the interesting thing is actually that with AI, it's going to change a lot of the jobs, especially the entry-level jobs after graduation. So that's one thing, which actually means that the pitfalls that AI brings, you know, what we are scared of, that it will take over, that it's not going to be trustworthy, all those things that we somehow want to fix with it, actually puts a lot of emphasis on exactly the same things that are the purpose of higher education, which is sort of the soft skills. It's about collaborating. A lot of it is multidisciplinary. How do we integrate AI? How do we use it? How do we use it together? And so we actually get into the same soft skills and same employability skills as we have found that are developed through internationalization of higher education. So that's a nice tie into sort of the main topic, at least for the EAIE. Now, the other aspect for me is then how the higher education institutions are addressing this. Who is gaining access to it? Are we putting efforts into this? Are we putting resources into it? And how exactly are we using it? So there's a lot of now sort of regulations coming up, both globally and nationally. But also for each institution, there's usually now being developed these guidelines for how to use it. So on the one hand, it's really the global perspectives, the purpose of higher education. What are we doing? How do we ensure access for everybody? How do we ensure equity, that it's not biased, and so on? And the other hand is then how the institutions really use it. And again, it's access for all students, but also for all staff. So in that sense, I feel that this really sort of combines the two other speakers here.
So Sandra, picking up on that point you've just made at the end of real use, of, you know, getting our hands into this space and doing things with it, I'd like to refer back to something that both you and Jeroen have already mentioned, which is this campfire session that you together facilitated at the EAE's own conference this past year in Rotterdam in September of 2023. This was focused on how international higher education professionals may or may not be working with or engaging with ChatGPT in their own lives. I'd love to have a sense of what struck you about that conversation with your colleagues last year. What were some of the inputs or queries from the audience that you found particularly notable? Jeroen?
Yeah, no, I take out two topics first. And that's the first one, and I think it's not a surprising one, and that's the enormous interest in the topic, but also the enormous uncertainty surrounding the topic. How can I use it? How do I use it? Where can I use it? All those questions where people feel like it's new, it's there. I might be able to do something with it, but I don't know how to implement it in my teaching, in my admin work, or in my daily life. So that's one of the things that struck me as an element. And I think it was there that one of the participants said that it could also be used in a different way, because we are used to teaching, having a lecturer in front of a room, sharing some thoughts, ideas, etc., and having a book which you have to read and produce an exam. But we also know that sometimes students have difficulties to grasp the topics, the content, don't understand what the lecturer is meaning. And one of the participants said, I've had a student who actually asked ChatGPT to explain it in a different way. And having it being taught in a different way helped that student to understand what the essence was of the lecture, of the course that she was following. So it actually was helping transition to, okay, now I get the idea, and now I'm able to understand what's being written down, what the teacher is explaining me. So it's in using it in a different way than just producing text, producing a summary in a different way than you used to. And that's one of the things that struck me in a positive way. Sandra, maybe you have some other experiences from this from the campfire, what struck you?
Well, yeah, I think that maybe the divide between those who really knew, they had tried it, they had used it a lot, they knew everything about it, and the very, very big majority. I mean, we had almost 200 participants, and the vast majority did not seem to know a lot about it or having used it a lot. I really liked the creative sides. I mean, there was this one participant who had not liked the ending of a book he was reading. So he asked ChatGPT to change it and to suggest a new one. And one of the actual, so we had the proposal for the ChatGPT campfire was made with ChatGPT. And so it suggested that we would have a competition for the best ideas, and we did. And one of the best ideas that won, I really liked, because this person had used ChatGPT to, you know, when you're really frustrated and angry and you write that email that you know that you're not supposed to hit send on. But she took it a step further, because she put that text into ChatGPT and said, hey, I want to say the exact same things, but not sounding angry. So she just had it remove sort of the emotions from that and still was able to send the same message. And I felt that that was really creative and useful.
That's super. No, that's really, really exciting. I love to hear that. And I was just thinking, you know, Jeroen, you were giving an example from a teaching context. Cynthia, I wonder if that example resonates with you in the work that you've been doing with faculty members or in the teaching environment, or if there's something else in that space you might want to point to as kind of an unexpected and thought-provoking way that it's actually reinforcing teaching.
Oh, absolutely. I found that some of the most exciting ways that friends of mine have been using it, and I myself have been using it, is for creating simulations and role plays and games and all these kind of just really deeply engaging activities that in the past, maybe we didn't do so much of because it was just going to take so much time, or we just weren't sure how we were going to approach it. And AI is fantastic for that. But I also want to pick up on something Jeroen said, and that is that it's remarkable how useful it can be for students. All the different ways it can be used kind of as a tutor, I mean, really in support of learning. And so I'm hoping that one of the things that we're all focusing on is how to help students learn to use it well, also, not just faculty.
Very exciting. Now, Sandra, you pointed to the fact that at the campfire session in Rotterdam, there were a large majority of people who hadn't touched this thing. Jeroen, you pointed to the notion that people said, I don't know where to begin. So I'd love to ask you all this question. Where is a newbie to begin? For people who really haven't worked with this before, are there some interesting first steps, meaningful ways to dip a toe into this that would open the door on possibilities for people? Sandra, could I ask you for this one first?
Thank you. Yes. So, I mean, we've been mentioning ChatGPT a lot, and that was really the one that got a lot of visibility, but it was also one of the first ones that really was available to play around with. Now there are more, and I get confused by all the different tools popping up here and there. One big confusion there is which ones are free and which ones require sort of a fee. And that touches upon what I said about the tuition or the higher education institution policy. Which one does maybe your institution go for? And is it an integrated version or not? Because these are coming up as well that are sort of integrated into the tools that you are already using in your IT. So my tip would be to maybe start with the free ones, to play around, because what was news to me was that they are, you know, they have different purposes. So the large language models, for example, they're really good at text and editing and reading through and summarizing. You can also use them for translation and so on. The paid versions, then you can use video and pictures and PDFs and what's not. But then you have, for example, Microsoft Edge has the Bing search, which is based on ChatGPT. It's actually based on the paid version, although the Bing is free, which can also be integrated. So there's all of these different mixes, but that is sort of a AI-powered search engine. Now, I've tried to, for example, do PowerPoints. I wanted, you know, AI to just poof, make me a PowerPoint based on some text. And that wasn't really available yet in the free versions. So I'd say that, you know, start with the free ones, start with the ones that you hear a lot about, and make sure you know what you want them to do. And then depending on that, you choose the tool. When you've chosen the tool to try out with, ask it how it works best for you. So really, because it is a chatbot, they have the chat functions, which means you are engaging in a dialogue with it. And because the different tools are operating in different ways, it really is best to ask them, how can you do this for me? Or what can you do for me?
I find that super fascinating that it doesn't necessarily come with an old-fashioned, you know, user's manual, but rather it's up to you to kind of engage in a relationship almost with the technology to find out how it can best meet your needs. So very, very interesting, Sandra. Jeroen, some tips for newcomers to this?
Yeah, of course. I think it's closely linked to what Sandra is saying, but I want to make it very tangible, very close to me. During the pandemic, everybody was working from home, not doing a lot of things. And within our office, we did a lot of online pub quizzes. Every week, somebody was developing one. So everybody was searching, looking, and those kind of things. And with the introduction of ChatGPT, I thought, well, okay, let's ask ChatGPT to make a pub quiz for me. A simple pub quiz with 20 questions. So I asked the software, give me a pub quiz, 20 questions. Including the answers. Don't forget that element, because I forgot that in the beginning and I had nice questions but no answers. And I started adding elements. I started saying, okay, the questions have to contain at least 3 questions about music and 1 specifically about Bruce Springsteen. I said, okay, I'm working in academia, so probably the questions need to be for people with an IQ of 120 and higher. We have got an international group of colleagues, so I want to have some fun facts of the following countries as well. And I started checking, okay, what do I get from ChatGPT? And I said, okay, number 6 is nearly right. Could you propose me a different kind of question for number 6? So I started communicating with the chatbot and said, okay, after a couple of back and forths, I had, hey, this is a nice pub quiz. And I used that in a social activity. So very tangible with examples of where what you have to put in to get something out. And what Sandra was also referring to, ask or whether the chatbot is understanding what you're asking, but also saying, can you improve the following elements? So it's a real interaction between you and the software. So that's the tip I wanted to give to people.
Fantastic. Okay, great way to begin. Cynthia, for the newcomers in your orbit, what would you suggest?
I'm going to go super practical here. I would say I really don't recommend that people use the original ChatGPT. It's 3.5. It's the second version is a 4.0, and it's estimated to be about 10 times more powerful. So just for now, I'm going to say go with Bing Chat. Because it's free, because it's 4.0, because it's solid, you have to use it in the Microsoft Edge browser. Probably within a month after this comes out, there's going to be a new one maybe. But for right now, I'm going to tell people to just go with Bing Chat. I would recommend that if you feel anxious about it, Maybe just get with a colleague who's been using it a lot and say, can I just look over your shoulder while you do this? I think that can be great. But I think something that also can make a big difference is using what are called cut and paste prompts. Those are prompts that someone else has already written for individuals in higher education. And you literally just cut and paste them into the GPT and make a few changes and you're good to go. And I've been collecting prompts like that in a Google Doc that anyone can access. And so we'll just put that in the show notes. And anyone who wants to see what I'm talking about, you can go there. It's nice, even to just look at the table of contents gives you a sense of all that AI is capable of. So I think you'll find that interesting. And I just want to throw in one thing, and that is one of the things I've been studying with AI is its translation capabilities. And it is extraordinary. And, you know, in the past, we've had, for example, Google Translate. It could translate into, say, generic Spanish. But AI can translate into specific dialects, tends to produce language that sounds a lot more natural. So yay for that.
I'm telling you, every time I have even a snippet of a conversation about this and I'm hearing about the next innovations and the next level of power and complexity, it does give you that twin feeling of giddiness and horror, you know, that you mentioned before, Cynthia. So exciting, but so somewhat mind-blowing, you know, about what we're on the threshold of. And you all have given us such fantastic insights into these areas that, you know, that should be on our mind. Can I ask you to think ahead a little bit with us? We're at the beginning of a new year. It's often kind of fun to look ahead. When we're imagining the road ahead for AI, maybe in the short to midterm, I wonder if there are any particular things that you're going to be paying attention to or hoping to see happen with this really incredible technology and its possible applications. So what are you looking forward to? Cynthia, can I come back to you on that question?
Absolutely. Here's my hope. I feel like while the careers we're preparing our students for are changing at light speed because of AI, many, maybe even most higher ed faculty are barely using it. And so my hope is that those who are in administrative positions really make this a priority and that faculty get started with, you know, bottom-up grassroots efforts to work together with one another to really figure this out and figure out how we can keep it from destroying student learning, which it can absolutely do, and figure out how to utilize it to increase student learning, which it can absolutely do. So I guess specifically, I hope that a year from now, everyone in higher ed has spent at least 10 hours experimenting with it.
Delightful, concrete, measurable.
Right.
Love it.
That's a smart goal, I guess.
Exactly. Jeroen, as you look ahead, what occurs to you?
Two elements for me. And on one hand, Sandra was already referring to it, the images and presentation development. I'm often searching for images which could support a story in a presentation, those kind of things. And I have difficulties finding those. So having AI tools helping develop an image which could support the story that I'm trying to express would really help me a lot. And I think those tools are already there, but I'm not familiar with those yet. So that would be one of the things that in the coming months, hopefully could help me a lot. And another element, I'm just going to use a brand name because I don't know what the names are going to be from other providers. Microsoft is introducing Copilot, which is a software you install on your computer, which could help you sort out through all the documents and emails you have when you're working on a daily basis. So it could summarize an email thread. It could help you find documents simultaneously on your email and on the hard drive, things that I'm usually struggling with. And I hope that such a tool could help me be a little bit more quicker or understanding what is happening or where can I find things in my daily business. So not just the text I want to produce, but also with daily activities where I'm sometimes struggling with. I heard that somebody sent me something, but where did I leave it? Or somebody mentioned something, but where and how? I don't remember. Was it a document? Was it an email? Was it a chat? And I'm hoping that tools like a Copilot from Microsoft or other companies would help me ease that a bit, make my life a bit easier, hopefully. But let's see in the coming months what happens.
The ultimate personal assistant, it sounds
hopefully.
Like. Sandra, what's on your wish list or your watch list?
Well, my wish list has a huge wish. As we've stipulated, you know, these, especially the language, the large language models, they're based on what we put into them, which in turn is based on who is putting stuff into them. And that takes us sort of into the internationalization of higher education issue with colonization, that's a hard word, and equity and access again. And if we think about the material that is produced in the world currently, it's a lot of it is Western. A lot of it is in English. And then that colors the outputs. So whatever goes in is what also comes out. So I'm worried about who is putting content in, who is using this, who's getting familiar with it, what is it used for, and so on. So my major wish for the incoming year is that there's enough diversity in who is using it, how it's used, what's put in, and sort of how is it learning, on what is it learning. On a more practical note, I'd like to kind of pick up on what Yaron said about the integrated versions. And that's where I really get this, oh my goodness, you know, if it starts reading all my Teams chats that I've ever, you know, written, all the emails, even the angry ones that I've sometimes written, and then it pulls all of this together, that's so cool, but so scary. What it does, though, is if you can contain that within your organization, it has the trust. So it complies with, you know, GDPR and things like that. So you can really use more sensitive material and put that in. Because one of the big fears right now in using these tools is whatever you put out there is then being owned by somebody else and used by somebody else. And so you don't want to put this and this and that. Although that might be where you would gain the most sort of leverage from using that AI. So I think that the second thing for me really is that we're going towards these integrated models where the higher education institutions are choosing one tool, which then really empowers you to use it for many different things and find your stuff, as Yaron said, but also using more sensitive material.
Cynthia, Sandra, Jeroen, your perspectives from Finland, from the United States, from the Netherlands, from different types of institutions and in different roles across teaching, learning, and administration have really enriched this conversation for me about how real people in our field are experimenting with AI and thinking about its possibilities. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and ideas. That was Sandra Slotta, Jeroen Auberg, and Cynthia Albi. Their bios are available with our session notes, along with some links to resources and information connected to our conversation with our three guests today on the hot topic of artificial intelligence. There is so much to learn about at the moment, isn't there? As you think about all of the important ways for you and your institution to reach your internationalization goals this year, we hope you'll keep the EAIE in mind. For example, registration is now open for the EAIE Academy, covering topics from credential evaluation and launching virtual exchange to supporting student mental health. Our courses deliver hands-on expertise that you can immediately apply to your everyday professional tasks. As a reminder, becoming a member allows you to save on all EAIE Academy courses and so much more. Visit the Join Us page of our website to learn all about our member benefits and begin your EAIE story today. That brings this episode of the EAIE podcast to a conclusion. We'll be back with a new episode in just 2 weeks' time. For now, sending you all good wishes from the EAIE.